You're listening to Cat Tales.
Hi, I'm Kat, and you're listening to Cat Tales. As a young boy growing up listening to the Sex Pistols and the Damned, Steve Strawn could only dream of being a member of his favourite band, the UK Subs. But fast forward a few decades and Steve found that dreams really do come true. Now the newest addition to one of the most respected bands on the punk scene, as well as being a member of Hi-Fi Spitfires and Loaded 44, Steve tells me about his challenges of learning the UK Subs songs on stage, his solo project, The Last Gang, and why he doesn't like to make his lyrics too obvious. This is The One with Steve Strawn. Steve, welcome to the show.
And thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, I'd like to start our conversation, if we can, with the UK Subs, because you are the newest member of the iconic band, the UK Subs. So tell me how that all came about.
Well, I've always been a fan of the UK Subs since I was a kid. And in later years, seeing them at Rebellion and places like that, I had no idea that there was that the guitarist was about to leave, you know? Mm. And then I kind of received a phone call of Alvin, the bass player, and I honestly thought, why is Alvin ringing me? He's never phoned me before. And my wife makes like punk rock clothing, and I just thought, he must be ringing to order a shirt, you know? That was my first guess, and he said, no, Steve, he said, I was just wondering if you'd be interested in joining the UK Subs. Well, I nearly fell over, you know, at the time. I couldn't believe it. So the answer was yes straight away. So that's how it all came about. Obviously, there was problems, you know, the guitarist wanted to leave or whatever, and then the slot became available for me to join. And
wonderful.
Dream come true.
Amazing, yeah. Isn't it? So, especially when you've always been a fan, it's always great to be able to fulfil that dream, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, it's strange being a fan of the UK Subs because when I was a kid growing up, we all liked our certain bands, and then certain bands kind of crossed over and people didn't like that. Some punks didn't like them, some punks didn't like them. But we all, honestly, everybody I knew just loved the Subs. So it was strange to be asked to join, you know.
Yeah, after all that time, isn't it incredible, really?
Yeah, now and again, I bump into my friends who I grew up with as young punk rockers. And they still say, like, Steve, I can't believe it, you know. It's like reality comes to home when I bump into these people and they just can't believe it, and takes us straight back to when I was a kid,
you
know.
Yeah, and how you felt as well, isn't it? It's always like, you know, it's like, if they could see me now, those little friends of mine, you know, song, you know, if they could see me now, there you are.
That's right. Well, now and again, because my friends have moved down south and whatever, who I haven't seen since we were kids, they come along to a UK Subs gig and they're just over the moon, just like they were back then. And then to see me in them as well, they're so happy for me.
Yeah,
and it's just really good and great to catch up with them.
Yeah,
but the UK Subs was also out of all the many punk bands that I liked as a kid, the UK Subs was one of those bands who I really liked the look of as well, because kind of good fashion, good clothes was always meant a lot to me. Like you know, I liked the way the Sex Pistols dressed, I liked the way the Clash for sure, the way they dressed. And the UK Subs was very close to that. They always looked great, you know.
Yeah. And of course, the music and the fashion actually go hand in hand, don't they? So it's interesting to hear there that you're actually involved with punk clothing now.
Yeah, my wife makes mainly punk rock shirts, you know. She's made them for people like Nick Cash out of 999 and many other bands. She made them for Mike Peters at The Alarm. Just two bands I can just think of now, you know, the really good shirts, yeah. Yeah, me and Alvin tend to wear these shirts, you know, on stage, so it's great.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So tell me how it's actually felt then, stepping in the shoes of all these fabulous guitarists who have been through the UK Subs over their time, haven't they? Great names in the punk world. Has that been tough acts to follow for you?
It really, really was tough because, for a start, like the way I joined, I was kind of parachuted in because basically Alvin, the bass player, lives in France.
Yeah.
Charlie lives like close to Brighton, and Jamie, the drummer, lived in Dunedin at the time, so it was impossible to rehearse. So So I remember my first gigs having absolutely no rehearsals at all and just kind of being parachuted in and just landing on that stage with no rehearsing at all. And the strange thing is you learn the songs by the records, not knowing that over time the records themselves have actually changed. They've shortened choruses, lengthened verses, and they hadn't realised how much the songs had changed, and I certainly didn't. So obviously there was the first few mistakes, you know, until you kind of iron them out and realise, don't play it the way the record is, you know. So the gigs themselves was actually my rehearsals.
Wow, that's pressure.
It was on my toes, you know. Yeah, it really was.
But you've kept up with it. Well, so obviously you knew the songs beforehand, so you must have actually been having a practice already with the songs already recorded. But as you say, the recordings are very different, aren't they? Because that's the commercial end of it. But a live gig is the full thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, when you said that I know the songs, I mean, I kind of, when I was a kid, I had the first three, maybe four albums. But I don't know how much you know about the UK Subs, but they've done an album for each letter of the alphabet.
Yes, I know.
They've done the complete alphabet, so I didn't have all those albums, you know. I bought a couple towards the end of their albums and didn't have any of the ones in the middle. And shortly after I joined, we'd done a gig where we'd done songs from each album or each single, you know, so there was loads that I learned just as a one-off gig.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a lot of work.
That is a lot of songs to learn, isn't it? And I guess although you may know them, you know, to listen to and to join in with, you know, from the recording point of view, you're not going to know the full repertoire, are you? Because that's just enormous.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I don't even know whether they do because they've all been in and out. Well, Alvin was in it in the 80s.
Yeah.
He left and whatever, and then he's come back. So some of the albums will be brand new to him as well, I would imagine.
I know. It's all fluid, isn't it, is the UK Subs. That's how I look at it. Very fluid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice and fresh.
It is.
Yeah.
But, of course, you're not only in the UK Subs. I mean, if that's not enough, you've also got another band that you're involved with as well called Hi-Fi Spitfires, which sounds a wonderful name, I have to say.
Right. We have been going since, when did we start again? 2007.
Oh, right.
2007. We've done two albums like on vinyl and CD, and we've also got like an EP single out, and we've toured you quite a bit as well. But I did kind of put it on the shelf when I joined the Subs because, like you've just pointed out, there was so much to learn. I had to put Hi-Fi Spitfires on the shelf, and I was also in another band which I've rejoined again called Loaded 44. And I had to leave them because I had so much, and it was unfair for me to try and continue with them and put them on a shelf and, you know, turn gigs down. So I told them to get another bass player. But as it's turned out now, time has went on and Alvin's doing a solo project, Jamie's doing a solo project, Charlie does acoustic stuff. So I found this like opportunity again to be in Lord of 44, so I've rejoined them.
Fabulous.
And I play bass for them.
I know, this is what the interesting thing was. I was just looking at that before, you know, we've had our conversation today, and I see that you play bass for Loaded 44 and you sing and play guitar for Hi-Fi Spitfires, and of course you play guitar for the UK Sub. So you've actually got quite a big number of instruments that you're playing.
I find the playing the bass like really interesting. It was challenging. Because I used to be guitarist in Loaded 44 years ago, a second guitarist. Then I left, and years later, they needed a bass player, and I thought, do you know what? I'd love to take the challenge on of playing the bass. And I really enjoy playing the bass for them, so I've just kept doing that, you know.
And that must be a different kind of experience, though, from bass to lead guitar. You know, you've got the rhythm aspect for bass, but, you know, leading the song is different, isn't it? So how do you find that sort of juxtaposition to balance?
Well, I kind of find it quite relaxing because I can kind of sit back a little bit, you know, and there's not so much thrown on my shoulders where I've got to sing. Yeah, I do a few baton vocals for Loaded 44, but it's nice to just take it easy a little bit. I mean, there is some pretty lively bass lines in Loaded 44, which I like because it's quite rock and roll type of bass lines. So I can get quite busy, but I feel really comfortable playing the bass for them, you know, it's good. It is quite different, as you say. really different, but it all kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's all part and parcel of that sort of musical sound, isn't it? And how it all blends together. And I think what's nice is that you've got a different experience for each of these different bands, haven't you? So they must have, in your mind, quite separate entities, which I think is probably useful.
Yeah, it is. It's totally different, yeah. And I had loads of good experiences with Load of 44, as I have with Hi-Fi Spitfires. And now the UK Subs, it just takes us to loads of different sides of it, you know.
Mm.
It's fantastic.
And then, of course, you do all your writing, don't you, as well? So I've seen that you've been doing a solo album, or you released a solo album under the name of The Last Gang. So you've also been doing solo work as well. That's a lot on your plate.
It certainly is, yeah. But I mean, it's nothing compared to what the UK Subs have done in their career as members and the band. So it does seem busy, but it wasn't too hectic for us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just a little bit of time. I wasn't in the UK Subs at this stage, and I was just in the other two bands. And I was writing some stuff, and it just seemed a little bit too different to what I was doing with the other bands. So I just kind of released it as that little solo thing. It was just something that I just needed to do, you know.
Yeah.
I'd love to go back to that, you know. But,
that's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting you've got their different places, or different bands rather, that you're writing for. So, and so you've written this body of work, and you thought, well, actually, that doesn't sound like a Loaded 44. That doesn't sound like Hi-Fi Spitfires. So it's almost natural then, isn't it, to do a solo album?
It is. Ironically, the guys out at Hi-Fi Spitfires liked the songs that much that they said, oh, can we not do them in the Hi-Fi Spitfire set? So we did end up doing a few of those songs, you know, and then we actually released a couple of them as Hi-Fi Spitfire songs, because it did actually work well. I was quite wrong thinking that was too different, but it was actually quite similar in a way, you know.
Well, I suppose it's those influences coming out, isn't it, from
the
young you, when you're sort of absorbing all the punk era at the time, isn't it? So, I mean, who were those influences that you know, the bands that you loved?
Oh, well, as a kid, obviously in the 70s, like, you had all the glam stuff, and it was, I really like the glam stuff now, but as a kid, it was just music in the background. I was just too much interested in going out on my pedal bike and, you know, being a kid. But it was when I probably heard the likes of the Stranglers, Rattus Norvegicus and things like that, and the Sex Pistols, never mind the Bollocks, like, it really kicked me up the bum, you know. It was really shook me, and that was the changes. I mean, I did used to, well, I still do love, like, early Dave Bowie, Ziggy Stardust and that, you know, that was quite moving for us. It was kind of pressing buttons for us then, and then when I heard the punk stuff, which to me is an extension of, but, you know, there's some similarities to, like, the kind of Ziggy Stardust stuff. That was it.
Yeah, I can see those similarities, actually. It's funny, isn't it, when you look back, it's at the time it seems very different, doesn't it? You know, you've got the 70s sort of glam rock, and then you've got the punk came along, and you've got great influences like David Bowie, as you say. And at the time they feel so different, but looking back now, it's almost like, well, they're just great musicians, and there's like a thread that goes between them all, isn't there, that is invisible to you at the time.
For sure. I mean, like that album, Ziggy Stardust, honestly, like, all the bands, like Susie from the Banshees and Billy Idol from Generation X, they were all for sure listening to early Bowie. And Susie was also listening to things like Roxy Music. And so they were their influences, you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, so how do you feel now about maybe being the influencer for other people coming through the music industry?
Well, that's a fantastic thought, you know. Sometimes I find it hard to believe when people say good things, and it's like, you know, I never take it for granted. I'm always quite moved.
Yeah.
And if somebody tells me, like, say, like a Hi-Fi Spitfire song, would say, like, I really, really like a song, can you tell us what it's about? I'm really over the moon to tell them what it's about and to hear what they've got to say about it. I find it really interesting and really good, rewarding.
Mm,
you know?
Humbling, isn't it, in a way, I think, to be honest? You know,
yeah.
I would feel like that. That's, you know, the way that it would make me feel. So, talking of Hi-Fi Spitfires, why don't we have a listen to one of your tracks, Backfire? Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, this is really, really interesting because at this point, I wasn't actually in the UK subs. I was just in Hi-Fi Spitfires. And ironically, we were supporting the UK subs in Glasgow. And what happened was, from us just walking into the building, watching the UK subs sound check, there was one guy who was just a real worky ticket, who was trying to start fights with people who were standing around. And then as more and more people got in, and then the band started playing, he was getting more and more pushy and chubby, and he just wanted to fight anybody basically in the building. And in the end, it all toppled, you know, the table turned, and he picked on the wrong people, and not myself, anybody, and it was kind of the backfire, you know what I mean? It all backfired on him. So that's what it's about, basically. Hi, this is Steve Strong from the UK Subs. You are listening to Cattails. Enjoy.
It's interesting that you said there about telling people what the songs are about, because I also read, actually, that you don't like making things too obvious when you're doing your writing, particularly for the lyrics, obviously.
Well, that is true. I'm sure I've probably fell into that trap sometimes, but a lot of the time I tend to write them, or subconsciously I write them, where it's not easy to work out what it's about, you know. You can see it if I told you, but it's not obvious. Yeah, I would say that's true. That's right.
Yeah. Do you like to let people to make up their own minds then? So, I mean, for example, I heard about one called Cover Up.
Wow.
And that's one about somebody having a cover-up tattoo. But the thing that comes to mind, of course, is something like a conspiracy theory, you know, and it turns out to be very different.
That's probably one of the best examples you could see, because did you know the full story about the cob?
No, please tell me.
Well, I knew somebody who worked in a hospital, and basically he worked with this big Elvis Presley fan. And this guy came to work one day and he had Elvis tattooed on his arm. And then about a year later, my friend was working with him again, and he noticed the tattoo would change loads, and he'd got into like God, and he changed Elvis to Jesus.
Oh, wow.
So I just thought, wow, that is a brilliant idea for a song, you know, like this guy changing this tattoo from Elvis to Jesus. And it blew us away. And I just thought, like, I've got to write a song called Cover Up. And everybody does think that, you know, corruption and whatever.
That's but, lovely, isn't it? Yeah. From one king to another.
Yeah, exactly. So he had to change that, that quiff to like the thorns around his head, you know. And I would love to have seen the tattoo. That would have been the icing on the cake.
Oh, it would, wouldn't it? Oh, amazing. So you hear these little stories, do these little anecdotes, and you think, do you know what? That sparked an idea for a song.
Yeah. I love things like that, you know, like reading newspaper and just, I make little notes, like, got to write a song about that, you know, and I'll just have this couple of words as like a title, and I'll go back to it and then write a song about it.
Oh, so this is, the title comes first, and then what, the lyrics next, and then the music?
Yeah. A lot of the times I've got like a catalogue of music on me little voice recorder thing, or on my phone, just like little guitar riffs, and then I'll write lyrics possibly separately and then trying to weave them together, you know.
Yeah, that's great. I love that idea that it comes from a little spark of an idea. I mean, I read one about Night Raid, and I was thinking The War, but it turns out to be slightly different, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, that's another great example. Yeah, I was watching a program about Britain in the Second World War, and it was like asking people how they were really coping with, like, during the Blitz.
Yeah.
And you heard these devastating stories how, you know, we're led to believe that people were some kind of extra human people who could take all this, you know, and cope through. But realistically, as you can imagine, we were taking it really bad, you know, like the loss of life and things during the Blitz. The devastation. And this guy came on, and he heard the air raid sirens, and he raced back to home, and he was with his friend, and sadly his friend got killed, just the two little children. And at that point he said, well, that's it, you know, I'm so sick of my life. And he went into a life of crime after that. And during the night raids, he was actually burgling like shops and things, you know, on a night. So when everybody was going down in the bunkers, he was coming out and robbing shops and things or factories. And obviously I'm not glorifying that one bit, but I'm just writing a song about how that changed somebody's life, you know, a life of crime, because he lost his best friend.
And you don't hear much about that, do you, really? The negative influence of those things from, you know, from the war and the bombing, etc., to actually push somebody down a route that they would never have dreamt about going.
That's right, yeah. I remember because he was an old chap when he was being interviewed on this programme, and he said, I turned around my mother and just said, well, there's me and you, and, like, forget the rest of the world, you know what I mean? Because he'd lost everything. His house, I think, was blown to bits, and... And he'd lost his best friend, who meant everything to him.
Yeah, hard times for people, isn't it, really?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I just thought that was an interesting story.
Yeah, well, it is, isn't it? And it has to be told. And, do you know, it's lovely to put music to it. And you wouldn't necessarily associate some of these themes with punk, would you? You know, punk's very rebellious, etc. It has that rebellion feel to it. But you're adding in another sort of layer, which is very interesting.
That's right. I mean, I was never really into the noisy stuff where there was no point to the music and the really bad lyrics. I like good titles, I like good artwork, I like good clothes, you know, so it's all part and parcel of it all. So it does draw us in if it's a good title, a good meaning, good lyrics. I hate bad artwork, you know, on records. I like to say good artwork, so, yeah.
It's all part and parcel of it, isn't it, really? It's all the whole package, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what drew us in with punk. You know, it was so colourful and different, and I like to keep it that way if I can.
Well,
my
yeah.
side of it.
Well, it's good to see that it's endured, really, with people like yourself and bands like UK Sub still going. And, you know, I think a lot of people who, you know, look back now will think, well, actually, you'd have expected it all to have died out when people got older. But I think it's actually got bigger following in some respects, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, around Europe and, you know, Germany and Belgium and Italy, France, it's just incredible. You know, it seems like we kind of invented it and they have just took it to another level. And also they know how to treat you so well as well, you know, accommodation and food and drink. So that's why everybody likes to go to the likes of Germany, and that there's so many places to play.
Yeah, and I think you did a tour, didn't you, a couple of years ago to Germany, but of course it's all on hold now, isn't it?
It certainly is, yeah. I mean, Germany, I mean, if you're talking about the UK subs, it's like non-stop. We're always like over in places like Germany, you know, like whether it's festivals or we do the winter tour. It's 5 weeks around Europe, you know, we're always over there. Some iconic venues as well, so...
I know. Yeah. I mean, and it's great to think, you know, that you've stood on those stages where others have trodden before you.
Yeah, well, one of my favourite venues is called the SO36, and it's in Berlin, and it's always one of the highlights of the winter European tour. And apparently Dave Bowie and Iggy Pop used to kind of hang around there. They used to go to nightclubs in there before it was like a venue for bands. It was like a nightclub type of thing. Yeah, so that's a good feeling, being in there, knowing that he used to go there.
A lot of people say that they prefer the more intimate gigs rather than, you know, the festival side of things.
Wow, I mean, I've done some crazy ones with the UK subs. Like, for instance, the one in Crawley we'd done when it was the beginning of the subs for me when I first started. And I was warned, like, that there was a few crazy people in the audience who were really subs fanatics. And honestly, the microphones and the stands just got trashed, like the first three or four songs. And I looked over at Alvin and one mic stand got demolished straight away. Not on purpose, it was just people being enthusiastic and falling onto there wasn't a stage, it was actually just straight in front of Alvin, and smashed the mic stand, and then they replaced it with another one. That got smashed, and I think this replaced it with another one, and then there was no mic stands left. And then one of our roadies, called Chris, had to just stand there holding the microphone in his hand. And then the next time I looked over, he was flat over on the floor.
Oh, no.
With people on top of him. Yeah.
Oh, I bet some of those gigs do get a bit mad.
yeah, but really enjoyable.
And especially...
Me and Alvin use them, we use them gigs like that in particular, me and Alvin use them foam microphone covers just so you don't get your teeth bashed, you know.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness.
It's never anybody doing anything on purpose. It's just like people just getting carried away jumping about, you know.
Yeah. There's nothing malicious. It's just that sort of enthusiasm for the music, which is great, isn't it, that you're moving people like that. But at the same time, you do want to keep your teeth, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I did actually knock one of my own teeth out at a gig in Liverpool once, and £180 later, replacement tooth, you know. So, yeah, it's not a good move.
No, let alone the pain. Oh, that would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, bless you. Well, you're obviously very brave.
Yeah. Just carried on. Carried on with the show.
Show must go on. That's what they say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Steve. It's been an absolute delight speaking. You have.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Kat.
You've been listening to Cat Tales. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.